This is KTO's Juno Afternoon, and it's 31 minutes after the hour. I'm your host, Christina Love, and on today's show, we're talking about reentry, and more specifically, a reentry simulation that happened here in Juno in October. Our guests on today's show are participants from the event, Representative Sarah Hannon, JPD Deputy Chief Campbell, and Sarah Gallagher. In the first part of the show, we really tried to emphasize what took place. We just have we have JPD Deputy Chief David Campbell, who's joined us here in the studio. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I do apologize for being late. I thought it was a 3:30.
No worries. We just figured you were doing cop stuff.
Well, administrative cop stuff.
Yeah, still cop stuff.
There you go.
So we got to hear from both Sarahs, Sarah Gallagher and Representative Sarah Hannon, on what their experience was like and what role they played. Would you like to share with us your experience?
Sure. I was a role player, so someone who was in jail and being released back into the community. And it was very one word would be frustrating in that you kind of had to take on a persona that really wasn't yourself. And there were things that you had to deal with, like I didn't have a driver's license. So when they started the clock, there's certain things that you are required to do. You know, you have to go see your counselor, you have to go see your PO, things on that line. And I noticed that I would stand in line, I would talk to the person, and everything I did was wrong. And I left feeling, wow, I'm further behind after this experience than when I started, because now I'm in the same position I was, but now I'm also down a bus pass, you know, a transportation pass. So myself and a couple of the other participants, Senator Jesse Keel and City Attorney Rob Palmer, were also role players. And we started talking amongst ourselves and kind of figuring out ourselves, hey, how's the best way to tackle this so we could be successful? Because the goal was to try to be successful. So we kind of had this like this divide and conquer, you know, mentality amongst the three of us in order to try to, I don't know, game the system is probably not the right way to, say.
That's exactly it.
But so like I needed a driver's license, but I didn't have any money. And I had a guitar that I could pawn, and C.A. Palmer, he didn't have any money, but he had an ID. So I was like, hey, I'll give you this guitar, you go pawn it, and we'll split the money. So it was kind of like a win-win, because then he was off doing something instead of me while I was standing in line. So when I got up there, I had the money to get the ID. So there were things like the cooperation between the role players was almost more enlightening than what I expected, because every time I tried to get help from, I guess you'd say, the outside, it was nothing but a roadblock and just frustration.
Yeah. How realistic do you think that is?
I think it's probably very realistic. I found that there was a lot of downtime. So you'd have like 15 minutes. And during that 15 minutes, there were certain things you were supposed to do. And of course, you couldn't get done what you needed to get done within that 15 minutes. So then you'd go back to the role player who was your PO, your probation officer. And they'd be like, well, you didn't accomplish what you're supposed to. You're going back to Lemon Creek. So we ended up spending a lot of time in Lemon Creek. And I remember thinking to myself, can't I do things in Lemon Creek? Like, couldn't I get an ID from Lemon Creek so that when I got out, I wouldn't have to be facing that additional hurdle?
Yeah.
So it seemed like there was a lot of lost time that could have been used to help me be successful when I was out, as opposed to just sitting there doing nothing.
Right. So naturally, your brain is hardwired to think of solutions.
Correct.
So you're sitting there and you're like, well, this would be very simple, right?
You would think.
Yeah, you'd think. Well, you'd and think. That's realistic, because you can't get an ID in jail or a birth certificate in jail.
Yeah.
But they do know who you are. And they've gone through all those verifications, the government accepted documents to verify that you are who we believe you are to are. And it was one of the ones Senator Keel and I talked about. This seems like a no-brainer, and especially as we approach the age of real ID, where there's an ever greater level. To get a real ID, you have to have verification of your residency. And of course, so many people have post office boxes. Well, that's not your residency.
Correct, yeah.
And if you've not had a residence, if you've been incarcerated or you live in transitional housing or you're homeless, what document would you ever have that proved you lived there? But all we can think of is everybody who's in jail and prison, they've verified who you are and they know where you've been living. Can't we do that?
Right. And verified with things like your fingerprints and things that are better than showing up with your utility bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I said earlier, it seems like we have set up a system where you really can't achieve what we've set out to do, because we've set it up pretending it's a system, but instead it's all these different siloed things that are required. You know, and I bet there's probably a law passed by legislators that does not allow the prisons to give exiting people identification papers. Yet it is the first step for 90% of people leaving jail or prison.
Yeah, and I'd like to think that I'm a pretty law-abiding, rule-following person, but I got to the point where I was just lying during it, because you'd be in jail and they'd be like, hey, you need to bail out for $100. You have $100? And I was like, no. But I did, because it was like, I don't want to – every time I did something, I was one step backwards. And having that fake $100 bill in my pocket was something that at least I wasn't going to give up. You know?
Right.
So it was almost encouraging me not to do the right thing, because I constantly felt like I was going backwards.
What you said right there is so incredibly powerful, because you're talking about what people have called the pathology of criminalization. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just survival. You know, there's a lot of words that we use in society to think about people who are incarcerated or people who are reentering society, you know, that really label there's an us and them, you know, thinking that if we were there, that would never happen. There was a lot of conversations that people said, you know, had this really been me, I don't think that it would look like this. But statistics alone say that you would, you know, a lot of people.
As a role player, I mean, you did have to suspend a little bit of disbelief, you know, but that was part of the lesson that we were learning as these role players, you know. Like, there was one time when I went to talk to a counseling session, and they're like, hey, draw this piece of paper. And I drew the paper, and it said, you are disruptive. You've been kicked out. Go see your PO. And in my mind's eye, I had to say, well, I would never do that, but I'm going to play along.
Oh, that's,
you know,
to
go through this, you know.
Okay.
So you had to suspend your disbelief and realize, okay, there's a lesson here we need to learn so we can, you know, improve things and make things better for, you know, Representative Hannah and Senator Keel and those types, because that's where it's going to change.
This is such a powerful, like, so this is my entire, like, professional career has been the liberation through education. And it's all been, for me, it's been pouring into studying, you know, all of the different ways to normalize my experience. So understanding that Sarah here talked about how she spent some time in isolation, and I spent a lot of my time in incarceration in isolation as well. And then understanding that at the heart of trauma is dysregulation of emotion. So it almost is like reaching into a bag and pulling out an emotion. So then you might be filled full of anger, sadness, or debilitating paralyzation where you just can't move. And so it is very similar to that. You know, so you could be in a counseling and then all of a sudden, you know, this emotion comes
I'm
up
sure
for you.
I'm sure it happens all the time.
But yeah.
I mean, you know, with me, where I'm at with, you know, my career and my education stuff, you know, I knew that Dave Campbell wouldn't be disruptive to the point where I got kicked out of something.
But if you went to jail and spent time in jail.
Right. So that's why I had a role play and say, okay, this did happen. I did have to do it. So now I have to go to the PO, because I basically just, you know, took my legs out from under myself. I did it to myself kind
of thing. Yeah. Well, also trying to imagine, what does life look like without natural supports?
Right.
Like you, Dave Campbell, without your career, without your family, without access to your bank account or to your funds or to a car or to your identification.
Right.
You know, what would life look like? You know, even just an hour, you know, if you take away any one of those natural supports for a day, let's say that you got fired today, like imagine like the emotional turmoil you'd go through and how traumatic that would be. And then asked, you know, to walk through a system, you know, like this is where it becomes. And this is the task, you know, of simulations like this. It's to ask people to suspend their judgment and to try and walk a mile in someone else's shoes.
And I'll admit that I wasn't too terribly thrilled when I was told, hey, you're going to attend this thing. So I was like, what? What is this thing? But when it was over, I looked back and I was like, okay, this was powerful. This was a good learning experience. And I got out of it, I think, what was intended.
What did you get out of it?
Just the fact that, you know, there are, like Representative Hannah said, you know, we think we have something set up for it, but we really don't. It's almost counterintuitive to some degree. And there's all these hurdles, all these roadblocks. And my best part was my own peer group. So I've been a part of other boards and committees that deal with like co-occurring disorders, and they talk about having like a mentorship program or a guide to help walk you through that, and that would have been so powerful. So someone, because at the beginning we knew nothing, and it was only through looking through the paper and talking to people, I was like, the key is the ID for the simulation,
right?
Because you needed it for everything.
Everything.
So that was really the key, and I was like, okay, well if that's the key, let's get that, and how do we get that? And if we could do something inside Lemon Creek, that would have made that much more easier to where we could have been more successful.
That's so good. Okay. So I want to think about what we're going to do differently.
Sure.
But for right now, I want to shift our focus to thinking about what did the simulation miss? So what are the things that can't be simulated? Sarah, do you want to dive into that?
I know with the simulation, the one thing I noticed was people didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do. And they were asking us questions. Well, what do we do? Where do we go? And it's like, I'm the probation office. Like, I can point you in certain directions, but at some point I couldn't do it. I had to send them off because I think one booth we should have had set up was a reentry booth. And we didn't have that. And so that would have been, they would have had, if we would, just like the reentry program here in Juneau, they have all the resources. You can go there, get in there, you work their program, and they can help you get all these things. But with this program, our reentry program here in Juneau is new, and it's a good program, but we need more,
Absolutely.
And so it was I had to play the bad cop, and I'm like, send people back to jail, or I can't help you. Like, I'm a probation office. It's not your job to give you all this extra information.
So in your experience of navigating through the system, have you heard people say that? People who provide services, will they tell you that's outside of their job description? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So thinking about all of the different things that they had to navigate through, what are the things that can't be simulated? Like, what are the things that you can't read off of a card and walk through? What is part of this experience of reentering the community that isn't something that you could do, Sarah?
Well, one of the things that struck me, and I'm going to reflect on Sarah Gallagher saying she was first in the system at 12. And so she's got a lot of history that she might not know, that she's drawing on, that she's familiar with. The terms, the vocabulary. And so, I bet even Officer Campbell probably has that. So, when it said you needed to go get a UA and you need to go to a 12-step program, but they weren't in the same location, or you need to go to job service, but you also have got to go to this other job thing to get a job assessment before you can go to job service. But there was no way in the simulation to take into account someone's past history. Is this the first time and they have no knowledge of how the system works? Or have they got a lifetime of knowledge or professional background? How much trauma has been involved with it? And I had the good fortune of, many of those simulated activities for me were the first time. It was the first time that I had to show up and pretend I was taking a UA. But all I could think of is, 10% of our population has been to prison and has successfully reentered. So someone in our simulation group has probably done that for real. And how did this trigger for them?
In Alaska, it's almost 40%. Almost 40% of our population has been to prison.
Yeah. And, we didn't have a measure for that. And I thought, I bet that this is making some people really stiffen up here, and not the people who are the reentrants who have got some power issues. But I think it also that turning of realizing the little sliver of power you had because you were on probation or you were that's all you had. And you wasn't necessarily – you didn't have knowledge of the other, but you weren't allowed to give it. And many of the parts of our system don't allow you. They don't allow probation to treat one of their people on caseload differently than the other. That, we'd view that as a really unfair use of the system, that Sarah Gallagher has been on my caseload. And so, I know that she has been in the system since she was 12. And I should account for the fact that she had lost teenage years and make sure that we're accounting for that. But the simulation didn't have a mechanism for that.
So an example could be like maybe a child who was sent to treatment, you know, in their adolescent years. They might have an aversion to going to treatment as an adult. That might be.
Yeah.
Or
you know, the places and, you know, all I can think of is reflecting on Alaska's horrible statistics with sexual abuse and trauma of children in a lot of institutionalized settings. Yet you're then asked to go to that church and get counseling. Because that's where the 12-step program is happening. And all I could think is, what if you had been a kid who'd been victimized in a church setting and this is where you have to go to get help? Is this really going to be helpful? You know, there are a lot of complexities.
That's a great point. Yeah, thinking about so other things that can't be simulated. So in the state of Alaska, you have a 50% chance as a woman of being physically abused, sexually abused, or both. So then what does that do for in incarceration? You have to strip down.
Yeah.
And most of the correctional officers are men. And most of the arresting offices are men, and most of the probation offices are men. And most of the prisons, except for one, they're men's prisons. You know, so thinking about that trauma and how it's compounded over and over.
Yeah.
What are some other things that the simulation that we can't simulate?
Nobody got to celebrate success, you know, and Officer Campbell wasn't here when we first mentioned it. But, you know, he was over there violating conditions of parole while he's cooperating with his colleagues and cutting a deal on the side of go, you know.
Sarah, we call that narking.
Well, I'm going to nark him out, you know. He figured out what I figured out really quickly was you were dependent on other people in your same position for knowledge and help. You know, you go pawn this, I'll split the money, yet. He wouldn't be allowed to do that. That would be a criminal activity between two parolees, and then, you know, both go back to jail for doing that.
Right. So it's important to normalize that. Like, that's just what happens. And some people go back and some people don't, but most people do end up back in jail. And it's just, that's just survival. That's what people do to feed their families, to get a bus pass.
Yeah.
It feels really important. Should we take another break and digest a little bit? We're really diving deep into it. Okay. Well, thank you guys for helping me set the stage, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Sorry for that.
Happiness.